just a particular model, the, maybe the simplest model in this interacting Fermion system that realize the top level order can never be realized in any boson or spin system. So, in the talk, I will mainly focus on this simplest model and just give you some flavor of how these things work and what's the main issue in for this topic about the Fermion system. So, maybe most of you already know something about the topic order because people use this word maybe every day because it's such a long time now, everything looks like related to topological order. I can give you some very concrete example that has already been discovered like 30 years ago. So maybe there are also PSI students here. You may have heard about this so-called freshman quantum Hall effect. So basically, the observation from experiment is that if we apply some perpendicular magnetic field to the electron system, then we measure this Hall conductance. Yeah, classically, it should be like this Hall resistance should be just a proportional to the magnetic field. But actually, interestingly, when magnetic field is very strong, there are some quantum plateau. And these plateau happen at some integer filling or fractional filling. So that cannot be explained by classical physics. So the most interesting part is this fractional filling, because integer filling, people already know that this so-called integer quantum Hall effect can be explained by occupation of Landau level, because if we think about electron system in a magnetic field, there are many Landau levels. So when electron occupy each Landau level, there could be some plateau in this Hall resistance. But the fractional quantum Hall effect is pretty exotic and cannot be explained by any free Fermion picture. So the underlying picture of this free Fermion system, why we call it topological order, is because in this fractional quantum Hall effect, we can find this quasi particle actually can carry some interesting fractionalized statistics. They are kind of something in between of this fermion and the boson. And the simplest picture to explain this fractional quantum Hall is that you think about the electron, they move in the 2D plane. There's a perpendicular magnetic field, so there are many this fundamental magnetic flux quanta. So this magnetic flux quanta can kind of attached with this electron. So each electron may be attached by several magnetic flux quanta, and then they form a bound state, and this bound state just form a condensate, and then we find it's an interesting topological phase. So Bob Laughlin first proposed the wave function description for such kind of phenomena. So that's almost the first example that we know the exact wave function for the topological order. So the wave function is very simple. If we use the Zi and the Zj to label this electron coordinates in 2D plane, so this Laughlin wave function can be just redone in this complex function. So this is just a Gaussian factor. And this the most important part is this it's an analytical function in terms of Zi minus Zj, because if you put the M to be zero, then this is just the integer quantum Hall effect. So it just fill up the Landau level, you get this form, right? Then you think about if you get a fractional quantum Hall effect, you just raise power. But interesting that this filling fraction for electron system always exist at this 2m plus 1, so which means when m is arbitrary integer, this thing is always odd. That's a real space wave function. So this is zi, you can write down in terms of a coordinate number. So it's kind of your 2D electron gas just lives in this 2D complex plane. Yeah.
So Each electron has a position. So here there are n electrons labeled by I and j. So it's a real space wave function. It's an anti-symmetrical wave function, right? Because it's a fermion wave function.
You can. This exponent part. It's a summation. Anyway, this is not the important part. It just tell you the wave function decay at a long distance.
It is a real space wave function.
Yeah, it's a real space
So,
wave.
like when you write phi, like does it, at what location are you on the left hand side? You don't have input on the left hand
It's a
side.
function of z1 up to zn, all the particle
Okay, I see.
Manipulate wave function.
Oh, is that 1 to zn, so that you have some distribution? I don't know. Anyway, let's go ahead. So.
So the interesting thing is that this so-called feeding fractions always have this odd integer. But this is obvious from here because the electron wave function is anti-symmetric. But of course, we can define a similar Laughlin state for boson system. And then you can show that any boson system, the only allowed feeding fraction must be this inverse of this even integer. So the corresponding wave function just replace this power to be even number. So here it's always odd number, and in boson system it's always an even number. So from this very simple observation, you think about this difference just kind of constrained by this the real space wave function, just the anti-symmetric or symmetrical wave function. And on the other hand, actually maybe in a more deep observation, we may want to say that actually the topological order in fermion system is kind of the it's kind of the square root of this bosonic topological order. It's kind of take the square root. Why? Because here you think about actually in fermion system we can always imagine there's a molecular limit, and in the molecular limit just nothing different from the boson, and actually we can even in fermion system in the molecular limit we can reproduce this, such kind of topological ordered state. But in boson system there's no way to realize such kind of Laughlin state, right? So that's the key difference between this boson and the fermion. Here I just show you some very simple example why it's interesting to talk about topological order in fermion system, because we got kind of get this square root, and square root usually means fractionalization. Next I want to just show you some very simple flavor about this very brief way to classify topological order in any dimension. So basically the picture is that basically at a very basic level we can have two kind of topological order. So one of them we call this so-called intrinsic. So the intrinsic topological order, in a sense, why we call it intrinsic, because they are not distinguished, they are distinguishable with the trivial phase. Even there's no any symmetry protection, we can add a perturbation that break all the symmetry, so it's stable. There's no way to connect it to a trivial state without going through a phase transition. But of course, there's another class recently people pretty interesting. It's the so-called the symmetry protect topological order. So the symmetry protected topological order, by definition, it's kind of only non-trivial when we impose symmetry. So the simple example, the recent very hot topic in condensed matter, this so-called topological insulator, the TI, and some recent proposed similar phases in interacting boson system in arbitrary dimension.
to the power 1, and bosonic is to the power 2n, any for any n.
Yeah.
And so, but in that sense, it seems like more roots than just a square root. But where do you see the just a square root?
This is not a mean, yeah, precise. This wave function is a square root. I just mean, in Fermat system, we could get this further fractionalized faces. So
okay.
Which I mean, there are some faces that can only be realized in Fermat system. Okay, so this is a very basic picture. And recently, we also show actually there's some very interesting duality between these two. Between these two basic class, because for any global symmetry protected phase, you can just gauge this global symmetry and you can make some intrinsic topological order. So this picture can be applied to generic dimension and also can be applied to fermion and the boson system, but the thing is that there are faces on both sides that can only be realized in fermion system and can never be realized in boson or spin system. So today I'm going to show a simple example why I want to make this claim. And actually the underlying mathematics is pretty interesting because as we know this bosonic topological order has been discussed a lot in recent years. Basically, the underlying mathematics is related to the tensor category theory, and there are some latest realization of a simple class that described by this Torreyev-Vairo invariance. This class is called a Skinner model. So the Skinner model is some particular exact solvable lattice model defined on spin or boson system, and can classify by this Torreyev-Vairo invariance or the underlying so-called tensor category theory. So very interesting question is that if we know there are many examples in the topological object can only be realized in Fermat system, there might be the underlying mathematical structure should also be generalized that associated with the Fermat system. Because so far the tensor category theory mathematically only kind of well defined for this boson or spin system. Let me show you some simple example.
What is the duality there? What's the duality between intrinsic and symmetry?
Oh, yeah. So here, this duality just for any symmetry protected topological phase, you can imagine it protected by global symmetry, then you can gauge this global symmetry. Once you gauge the symmetry, if it's a discrete symmetry, then most of the discretized gauge theory is topological ordered.
What do you call it, the duality? It's not like you think of that.
If it's abelian,
yes. But if it's an abelian, there is no inversion.
Even for non-abelian, you can still apply this duality. But of course, here, of course, it's much more rich in the intrinsic topological order side because there are faces described by quantum.
I'm just saying that calling it duality implies the map, and you write an arrow, it goes two ways, but that's not true.
There's a subclass can be explicitly map this in two ways. It's just like you map the Z2 gauge theory to the transverse IC model. So you can kind of generalize those maps.
I understand when the group is abelian.
Yeah, even for
if you have a symmetry on one side, there is sort of a generalized symmetry on the other side.
Yeah. But even now, then you can still gauge it.
Yeah, but you cannot go back.
Why? I don't see why for now, then there's a problem.
I mean, for example, in two dimensional for ZK, I guess that you gauge the ZK, or just for a U1, let me do continuous for simple.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're gauge a U1 ferrosymmetry, you get a new ferrosymmetry, which is whose current is direct, I mean, it's the field strength.
Mm-hmm.
And if you engage it, you go back to the original field. So that's a reversible operation.
Mm-hmm.
But if you did for an SU2 gauge theory, you wouldn't be able to go back. I mean, there is no operation on the generic.
Yeah, Yeah, actually, we may discuss about this in more detail because we actually feel even for non-binary group, but Canadian group, I agree, might be more subtle, but at least for any discrete has a non-binary group, it is explicit in that.
Which operation do you do on a T-ring to undo the gating?
Which operation?
Or if I give you a theory, how do you recognize what is the symmetry protected theory?
Actually, there's a kind of response theory. You can, if you have a global symmetry, you can always couple to external gate field.
Sure.
And then there's a non-trivial response.
I understand this map.
Yeah.
I don't understand the other.
You mean for
you
any
write
gate theory?
You write another with two tips. I don't understand one of that.
Oh, yeah. Maybe, but this is not the purpose of this talk. Maybe we can explain, I can explain in more detail. So actually, kind of, in this side, we have some, for any gauge theory, we have a digraph Witten classification. But based on that, you can go to that side. Yeah, we can construct this map explicitly, I can show you. It related to this cohomology group. Okay. So, let me just first remind you this is so-called toroidal model, the simplest model that describes the toroidal ordered phase, and maybe most of you already know this model. So this model is very simple. You can define this model on any trivalent graph, and let me just define this model on the Honeycomb lattice. It's a trivalent graph. Okay, the degree of freedom, spin 1/2 degree of freedom, they live on the link of the trivalent graph. And then we have a vortex operator, which is defined on a vortex. So it's a multiplication of the three sigma IOC. Also, this second part we call Plaquette operator, multiplication of 6 sigma Lx. So basically, you can check this two-term commute. It's very simple. So this is the simplest model can realize the so-called topological order, because we can visualize the topological order very easy. We just make a map. We map this spin-up configuration to no spin, and a spin-down configuration to a string. Then this first kind of constraint just imply we don't want open string at low energy space. So this string actually, in the gauge theory language, this model is equivalent as the Z2 gauge theory. So this string is just like a Wilson loop. So basically, in the low energy effect field theory, we just want to have this closed loop. And the second term is just a kind of loop creation, annihilation, and this loop can fluctuate. So it favors this loop fluctuator. So it's kind of the ground state of this model, just the equal with the position of all closed loop. Yeah, so that's the ground state wave function. Then you can see the topology here in a very simple way. First, you can think about the low energy subspace is made by this loop. Then you cut the loop, you have two ends. Then these two ends actually describe this Z2 gauge charge. And if we put this ground state function on the torus, you will also see something interesting things that you can define some global loop that cannot be contractible on this torus on both directions.
Sorry, so like the up and down, are they the eigenstate? Which one's the eigenstate or which? I mean, how do you see the first, even the first one that's no open string? So because the down is the negative, no, which plus one eigenvalue of sigma z or?
Yeah, up and down just the, up just the plus one, down just minus
for
one.
For z.
Yeah.
So up top gives minus one, down top
is
one.
Yeah. So you need to have two solid ones, so you need that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, very interestingly, actually, there's a slightly twisted version of this kind of model. So we can call it this twisted particle. And we can, in principle, write on similar commuting Hamiltonian, but it's complicated. But let me just describe this wave function. So this twisted wave function, Bronsted wave function, just have some additional sign factor in this loop space. So basically, the simplest one just equal with this superposition. The slightly twisted one just make a minus sign here. You count the number of loops. If it's odd, then you get a minus sign, even if it's plus sign. But interestingly, that these two models actually they have the same Bronsted degeneracy because in terms of loop, you still have global loop along x direction and along y direction, so it's still four degeneracy. But interestingly, that if you cut this string, you find two ends. In this model, it's a semium. So semium just basically because there's a minus sign here, and this minus sign will tell you the breeding step distance for the ends. And actually, there's more slightly mathematical way to describe this, but I don't want to go through this in detail. I'll just tell you some flavor why we can basically get these two solutions. This phase is a kind of topological phase, so we should be able to define such kind of phase on any graph. So why we can have this two kind of basic phase? The reason is that in principle we can define some so-called a fusion rule. So this fusion rule is kind of define the transition amplitude for the wave function on different graphs. But here, I just mean the outside, I just locally look at this part of the graph. The graph may be very complicated. It could be a very generic trilinear graph. So I just look at this local part. And locally, if I can have a transition amplitude from here to here, and generally this transition amplitude could be alpha. I put that alpha there. And then if I have such kind of local fusion rule, I can change the number of loop. Okay, but in what sense is topological order? So if it's topological order, that means that this kind of wave function should be a fixed point. And this, if we evaluate this amplitude for arbitrary configuration, they should be self-consistent. So actually, you can show there is a self-consistent requirement if we want to generate this wave function through this so-called local move. Yeah. So let me just show you that we have a particular configuration like this. So this particular configuration just means I consider this local area just evolve these sides on the link. So the solid line just means on this link occupied by string. Dashed line means there's no string. So I just interested in this local area. And I try to throw this local rule to compute the amplitude of the wave function. So the I want to know the transition amplitude between the wave function of such kind of form. So it's kind of all these legs just rotate. And actually, basically, I can have two different ways to compute this transition amplitude. So one way is that I apply this local move here first. Then I go to some graph like this. So there's an intermediate graph like this. Then I just apply some trivial move because I just put this vacuum line on this side. And finally I apply for the second case. I apply local move here, and then I apply local move here, and finally I get this state. But on the other hand, so here I get a coefficient r, and this step off need r. So in total, you see it's alpha squared. But on the other hand, I can do it in this way.
Is alpha always 1 and minus 1?
Yeah, here I just assume this alpha can be arbitrary. I just show you
how do you distinguish this picture from the other picture?
Distinguish which picture?
sorry, how do you distinguish the left and the right?
Left and the right?
They're identical. So, I mean, if I apply the rule again, I get alpha squared, not the original.
They are different. So,
how so?
So, this is they connect in different way. They can change the number of loops. So, you can think about if I have.
No, I understand, but if.
But you can apply again
locally. This local rule, does it depend on the orientation of the plane?
Mm-hmm.
Or not?
Because
if it applies no matter how I'm rotating the picture, then I can apply it again and I get alpha squared times division.
Yeah, I see. So in general you cannot do this reverse.
But
in general
you're applying it all over the place.
I just do not specify this orientation. Actually, you should kind of assign some special direction. You cannot change this orientation for this local loop.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a general term. Yeah, in this case, of course, it's a special. Actually, you can realize this local move, make it independent of the orientation. You can rotate it anyway. So then you can just simply get any solution just a plus minus one. But I just want to show you the general way to derive these conditions. Yeah, so the other way is that you can do it this way, and in this way you find there's no coefficient, right? And then you finally get the condition that alpha squared must be equal to 1, then alpha can only be plus or minus 1.
You get that anyway. you get the same condition. But how can you, for example, when you go from above, the two times you apply the moves, how can you be sure you're applying the right direction? If, if you said there's a 1, you have a preferred direction to get alpha, then like on the top, right, you apply it twice, but the dotted lines are slightly different. How are you sure that you do not break the...
You can just specify direction. In this case, just look at this local movie in this. Yeah, you kind of repeat this a little bit.
Yeah, but then it does not apply.
But then I guess those two
does not apply to your intermediate thing. That's not
you mean for this?
Yeah, that's not what you're going.
I think it does.
Sorry. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, but of course, in this case, it's too simple, so it doesn't matter.
Okay.
Yeah, so, yes, this picture just oversimplified. But in general case, you should assign some special direction. So that's, of course, the key difference between this Fermi and Boson system. So in Boson system, you can find some kind of, some way to make it just symmetric. So here we understand that why this in the Zico gauges theory we get these two kind of different twists. Actually, there are some mathematical theory can tell you that there are only two in-equivalent solutions according to Dybar-Witten. So basically, this kind of solution for any discrete gauge group, they can be classified by this cohomology class. So if we put a Z2 here, it tells you the only solution just a Z. Yeah, so there's no other equivalent solutions. So now let me go to this interesting part that what happened for a Fermi system. So the claim I want to make that actually in a Fermi system, we can make this coefficient something like plus minus I, make a further fractionalization in a Fermi system. So the basic idea is that if you look at this kind of move, if I just put my minus I inside, it's obvious it does not work because this two way, there could be a minus sign ambiguity. But that's interestingly that in Fermi system, this minus one ambiguity can be eliminated by this ordering of the fork space. So in this different way, if the Fermi ordering in fork space has been reversed, then it will recover this minus sign automatically. So that's the tricky that why we might get more solutions in Fermat system. So the setup for this Fermat system, this model could be slightly complicated because we want to introduce some Fermat anyway. So in this case, the Filikov states, not just on the link, because in the boson case, if you look at this triangle graph, we have I, J, K. We have these three states on the link. But in the Fermat system, we should introduce some Fermat grid freedom on the vertex as well. So in this case, the total field space is just the product of this so-called bosonic indices, which is just basic spin indices on the link, and also the Fock space that on the vortex. Yeah, but you can also make the setup in some different way, but this is one simplest possibilities. So in this way, we can think about some modifier version of the diffusion rule. Of course, I also want to introduce an error in generical way.
Why is the vertex space a Fock space?
Sorry?
Why is the vertex a Fock space?
Oh, because I put the Fermat here. So on each vertex L, I can have to define a Fock space. So basically, there are two for the two-dimensional Hilbert space. So it's a Fock space. But if you multiply all the vertex together, then it's a Fock space.
So it does no longer means like morphisms from like ij to k or anything like that. It's not like that.
Ij to k.
And then often in pictures like that, when you draw a vertex, like in like that picture maybe. Yeah, like usually you can kind of.
You mean in the tensor category
language? Yeah.
Yeah. It's you can have some picture like that, but this morphism can be. Decompose into two sectors. Yeah, there's additional label in the model.
For example, in that VCW model, something like that, could be there are more than one intertwiner between the representations. So you would label the vertices by each intertwiner.
So the degrees of freedom of this model with box space label for the vertex is twice as big as the degrees of freedom without it?
You can have degrees of freedom on the vertex, even in bosonic models.
Yeah, exactly. So this is just multiplied by 2.
So he's adding the feature that these degrees of freedom live in a graded vector space
right,
with the
Grassmann.
If you have WZW for some supergroup, you might have this.
So the interesting thing is that in future we want to implement it for supergroup. So now I want to specify this fusion rule. So let me summarize this bosonic part. So in the bosonic part, it's very easy. So the on each such kind of vortex, we call this this fusion rule. Just we allow the allowed state on the vortex just a 4. So and in general, in this at least in the Z2 case, we don't need to specify this ordering because they are rotationally invariant, which means. Which means this fusion space nijk is symmetric. This nijk just this ijk just take the label as 0 or 1. It just means there's one string on the string, so it's cyclic. So there's a cyclic symmetry. But in general, we should remove this cyclic symmetry, and there could be you can assign some time direction. So once we have this direction, then one link might become special, but you will lose this kind of cyclic symmetry. And this is an important feature for Fermat system. If we always impose cyclic symmetry, there would be no non-trivial solutions in Fermat system. So the fusion rule for this non-trivial model actually it's interesting. We should introduce this kind of time direction the rule is similar like this. The allowed configuration also just a 4. Okay, just a 4. But the interesting part is that in this configuration, we will also create a fermion. As long as two spin join this way, we must create a fermion. So on any triangle graph, if we assign some direction, then you will see that on this honeycomb lattice, if we assign some direction in this way, always induced by the direction. And on this vortex, if we have a string, they join and this vortex, then must create a fermion. So that's a key difference from the boson system in this fusion space. So this Nijk, which just choose as 0, 1, in this case, can be split into two pieces. Even though Nijk is a bosonic fusion channel, and this is a fermionic fusion channel. Right. So in this case, it's obvious that this is three operation corresponds to the bosonic fusion channel, and this corresponds to the fermionic fusion channel. So either we choose this to be 1, this to be 0, or this to be 1, this to be 0.
So on the left, the left-hand side picture, and the third one in the first row, and is it like actually the left-hand side you mean to the dotted line, and the bottom line is the stick line?
Sorry, what's the question?
The middle column.
This one?
No,
this one?
The next column.
This one?
No, the like column.
This one?
No, to the
left. Hand side.
The middle of.
Left hand side.
Yeah.
But the third one on the first line. The
here?
Third one, well, yeah, to the right, a little bit. To the right. Yeah, do you mean to draw a slightly differently?
No.
But you have two of the same thing right now.
Yes, right.
So you mean the incoming from the left is actually dotted and the bottom is the solid?
So you just complained that you didn't draw all the possible ways to...
Yeah, it's different. Here I don't have
is that,
because in the bosonic case, there's no fermion.
You just didn't draw all three cases, okay? You repeated the first and the third. Doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. But you, in the bosonic case, you already impose condition that there's no cyclic symmetry.
No. It's just a trivial mistake. It's
no,
just
no, but no, but a separate question.
In the bosonic, it's
yeah. But this is a separate question. Like you write Nijk does not equal to Nkij. So that's the something in the bosonic case.
No. I mean, in this bosonic case, you can in this particular Zipf example, you can.
So, but it's like the not equal being on the right hand side.
I just mean in the feminine case, you must violate this.
Yes.
Yeah, I just
sorry.
That's good. So basically, actually, we will find that there's a non-trivial solution if we use such kind of fusion loop. We always create a fermion when we find such kind of string operation. So, if we draw this this local fusion loop, just the so here in this configuration we have a fermion here and this label that up. Let me label this as A. So we see that if we want to map this basis onto this basis, we animate a fermion here, and then we create a fermion here, and then we allow this phase vector to be I. And also there are other fusion configuration. But the other fusion configuration is in the sense that they are just a trivial. Why they're trivial just means it's kind of, you can make this string longer or shorter, and you can also make this fermion move. I can show you some simple example like this. I can also have this fusion. Okay, I call this thing. Yeah, so you can enter the fermion here, put the fermion here, just like you can free move this fermion. So in an actual lattice model, you will see just like you can make this, when you make this string bigger, you can move this fermion from this, if we assume this direction, we have two fermion here. When we make this loop bigger, the fermion can move to other places, but without any sign, just the amplitude, just the one. Yeah. Okay, so in this case, you will see that it is a consistent solution for this. So let me just show you how this works. But because there's a fermion ordering, so we need to do this more careful. So yeah, if we introduce the time direction this way, we put the arrow on the screen. And if two arrows join, we will create a fermion, right? So let me label this fermion as 1 and 2. Okay, let's look at what happened in this configuration. So in this first step of move, if I want to from this graph to this graph, actually I need to annihilate C3 and create create C2 by if I compare these two graphs, I create fermion here, I create fermion here, right? And then I compare to this graph. This graph is just a trivial, nothing changed because I just move this vacuum line. Then let me just look at this graph. For this graph from here, from here to here, what we did is that, let me label this here. So the transition amplitude just the way we click fermion 3 and we annotate fermion 4. Right? So we annotate fermion here, we create a fermion here on 3. Okay, so this is the, for this path, we go in this way. And for this path, you know, this path is almost just like a trivial path because we just freely move this string. So we make the string this way, we just make it shorter and the fermion moving this way. So there's no non-trivial sign. Therefore, call this fermion number 4. This is fermion number 2. I just annotate C4 and create C1. Okay, so the final step is also just nothing interesting. I just annotate C1 and create C2. Very good. Okay, so now let us compare this. What's the sign change in this two paths? Yeah, so in the first way, we multiply I together, so we have minus sign. C2 diagonal C3, C3 diagonal C4.
You have to reverse the arrows in the bottom. 1, 2.
Oh. So this is the first way. And the second way is in this way. Okay, so let's just look at this these two terms carefully. We start from this configuration, we want to end up with there. So in this configuration, there's no C3. So we want to write that in slightly different. It's minus C2 diagonal C4 and C3 diagonal. But this is just a kind of a trivial acting on this because it created fermion and nothing changed. Right? So in the end, just minus C2 diagonal C4. But how about for this? If I put C1 diagonal, I exchange C1 to this side, it's kind of C4, C2 diagonal, C1 diagonal, C1. But this part also just equal to 1 for acting on this because they are already from N1. So we can ignore these. So just compare these two terms, but it happens just there's a minus sign emerge when exchange is ordering fermion operator. So that's the magic of why this fermion can get this additional twist in this fusion space. Okay, so that's almost the whole story for this simple example.
So minus, do you have minus sign in the second twist?
Which one?
C1 divided C4, C2 divided C4.
C1
is a C4.
Sorry.
The bottom.
Bottom line?
Yeah.
C1
diagonal
C4.
C1 diagonal C4?
Yeah.
I don't have minus sign here. Why?
Because the fusion rule on the right, not the fusion rule, the change the move, the other second move there, it doesn't have come on the I. So that's why you want.
Yeah. So the first line I have this I, so I have minus one. So the second line I don't have I. But this, if you just think about in this, if there's no fermion leap on the vortex, then these two paths, they do not consist, right? There's a minus sign difference. But it happened that if I introduce fermion, it recover this minus sign. So this fusion will become consistent. And this consistency actually implies that you can construct the parent Hamiltonian for the Gronsted wave function. So in this case, this Gronsted wave function, actually the solution almost like a plus minus I. But you need to, there could be some ambiguity from this ordering of Fock space, so it's not so simple, but for any configuration, you can use the local move to reduce it to the simplest the vacuum, and you can know the sign for each term in the wave function. But roughly speaking, just you replace this minus one to minus, plus minus I. So next, we want to show that this theory is really non-trivial. Non-trivial in the sense that we must show that there are some measurable things that are different from the Tauri coil, right?
Do you
so,
get four-state
fermionic phase system? Yeah, four-state is still the same. That's become obvious because you can still have this global spin around the torus, so it's still four-fold degeneracy, that's no problem. But the important thing is that I want to show this Hodge particle. Statistics, actually, they are different. It's not the same as the Tauri coil in the Issa boson fermion or the two things.
Discussion. Is the fermion number of the four states on the torus? But, I mean, what's the fermion number of the four states on the torus?
I think it's even, yeah. But, maybe it could also be odd.
What do you mean, the total number? You mean, is it always
possible? I don't know how to, maybe there's some room that, it depends on how you construct this parent wave function, apparent Hamiltonian. In a simple way, I think the wave function just fermion parity even. But there could be some room you can make a little bit of twist in the Hamiltonian and get an odd sector. But both sectors, I think it doesn't matter, it's just for the degeneracy. So this even odd parity is slightly, related to this so-called spin structure of this, how you put on the manifold. Okay, now let me show you why this solution actually is non-trivial. So we want to compute some topological properties for this solution. So the property, one property we want to compute is the T matrix. So basically describe the self-gradient of this quasi-particle. So we just want to use some simple way because more generically there's you can construct a string operator and you can compute that in a systematic way, but it's complicated. So here we just use some trick. The trick is that we just use this so-called Dan twist. So the Dan twist is something like this. If we think about a torus or a cylinder, so this both sides you can connect or not. So think about it, you have a string like this, and if you then twist, it just means you cut somewhere, rotated 2 pi, then glue back. So you finally end up with something like this. Okay, so if we want to compute a T matrix, we just we make a dentist on the torus, and then we can represent this new wave function from the all the topological sector, and then we can just, if we diagonalize that sector, we basically get this T matrix. So the computation is actually in this way, it's much easier. We just draw this torus in this way. I'm not sure it's the best way. So it just means this this interior loop connect with the outside loop. And because it's a fixed point state, so it's enough just to consider a graph, a triangular graph with 2 vertex only. So of course, one simple graph is just this vacuum graph. But obviously, if we do dentist, nothing changes. Right, for the vacuum graph. But if we label this as 0, 1, 1, 1, 0, 1, just 1, 0, 0, 0. Okay. For the second graph, and we can think about a loop surrounding this torus. Again, it's the interior area connected with the outside.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the dentist action on this is non-trivial, but here, yeah, we can choose the arbitrary choice for this arrow. This direction on the graph. So we choose it this way. We have 2 fermions here. If we do the dentist, that means that we want to cut the string connected to this interior part and rotate by 2 pi and glue back. But in this case, because this string just vacuum trivial, so actually also just nothing changed. So if we label this as 0, 1, 0, 0, it's also good. So the only non-trivial case is...
Which string is non-trivial? I cannot quite see in that.
Oh, here.
The horizontal one? The whole thing is non-trivial?
Yeah, it's a loop. It's a loop around it.
Right. And then where's the where's the dotted line?
So here is nothing. Yeah,
okay.
Maybe I just remove this.
Okay.
Yeah, here, nothing can happen because I do the dentist twist on the interior part. So...
Okay.
So if here's nothing, I just
right.
Rotate back and nothing.
Sure. Why do you draw the thing with the line? Like why don't you draw? Why do you choose the pattern you draw the first thing there?
Why?
Yeah. What does it represent? This like not quite a line. Why is it not just one? It's
simplest
trivalent
graph.
Hmm. Sorry.
It's a trivalent graph.
Yeah. The simplest trivalent graph. Because it's a fixed point, it's enough. You just think about the simplest triangle. Yeah, you can do more complicated one, but it's came up with the same result. Yeah, basically, the idea is that you consider 4 topological
mm-hmm.
sectors, and for each one, you just do the dentist,
mm-hmm.
and then you. yeah, so the next one, the slide I'm curious. We can just assign the arrow in this way. And this one actually is not trivial because if we cut it here and we rotate, and we actually will end up with something like this. Yeah, just don't draw this dash line to avoid the confusion. Maybe it's more clear. If nothing, I just draw nothing. So if I assign the arrow in this way, so in this way you see that this dentist will not change the fermion number because here there's no fermion, here still there's no fermion. But this graph is different from this. So actually this is corresponding to the last public sector because we have a fourth sector. So this is actually corresponding to the last sector. Yeah, so in this sector, just the spin around this direction on the torus, and this sector just around the other. And this actually just around the both direction. And actually if we do the same dentist, you will find something interesting here. So this is just what I label this as 0, 0, 0, 0. Label this as 0, 0, 0, 1. And the last one is interesting. And we do this more carefully. Yeah, sorry, a little bit slow on the finish. So if we use this convention, there's no fermion from this initial state, just to say, at this one. Mm-hmm. So I want to put the dentist. I cut it here and rotate. So it comes up like this. Right. I cut here and rotate 2 pi and then it becomes a graph like this. So if I assign the error orientation in the same convention. And then I needed to apply some basic move to reduce this graph. It's complicated because it's nothing matched with this four different bases. I want to reduce this graph. So the first move, I can kind of act some of this basic move on this two vertices.
You could apply the move before the twist.
Yeah. So let me show you. So after applying this move, it becomes something like this. Okay, so the interesting thing is that here we actually create two fermions. So we need to annotate the two fermions to go back to this graph. And then we can further reduce this because we can all these things can go around here. And finally, it comes up like this.
Does the fusion rule exist or not the case without any fermions?
Sorry?
Like the rule there?
What if
you change the error direction?
This is just a tribute. Yeah. You just move the fermion to here, so
right.
Nothing changed.
Yeah.
No phase.
There's no phase, nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean like over there, so if we were trying to apply the rule before you do the twist, like on the picture above to 0, 0, 0, 0, 1, we might be tempted to apply the fusion reconfiguration rule first. But that's not the rule that's there because there's no fermion on that. So does that rule still exist? Like
you mean for this?
Yeah. Yeah, if you try to do that, does it work? I mean, or does it not in your theory?
he's also applying it here to a situation where he has.
Yeah, but then that's already when. Oh, yeah.
He maybe has
true.
No permanence, so that's not the working
that's
possible
true.
Forward.
Yeah, so you could prove the other way, I guess. Yeah.
If you apply some this the move change the loop, it will create a formula anyway. Here could be some detail I don't have time.
Okay.
So
there's some more pictures.
This is not the only move because it can also have some move like this.
Yeah.
So you assign this error a different way.
Yeah,
so just like the draw your first thing here is slightly the trick of this.
You
but this is still change the Feynman number.
I see.
And actually, you can also define this in a consistent way.
Sure.
Yeah, so here, still change the Feynman number. So always change this Feynman character. So I think, maybe I just do it in this way. And finally, I can remove this two formula. So, yeah, actually, there's an addition rule here. I don't have time to mention. That we need some rule that how to remove two formula. That rule is has been used. Here. This is actually. It's an important rule. So if we look at such kind of configuration, you will have for something like this. Cut this up, it's big, and here I have two points. And the other side, there's no fun because it's just goes through. Here also should be kept because I create a beta first, then create alpha. So this order cannot be reversed. It's some convention. If you reverse this, then you have the solution here to put a minus sign there. Yeah, but with this kind of so-called banding. So in the tensor category theory, actually, it's kind of how to define this this short indicator. And with this kind of move, you can finally reduce this to this. And just also by annihilate this formula in proper way. You compare to this, it just you create C1, C3, by label. This is 1, this is 2. Label. So finally, you put this two terms together, and you find it actually this is this 0, 0, 1, 0. The transition amplitude actually is I. Yes, I. So this I is the non trivial thing that makes you get the image. So it's like 1, 1. And 0, 0, and this is still 1. This is R. And then you diagonalize, you find that if you diagonalize, you find that the face should be like 1, 1, E2I. Yeah, basically just. So this is kind of different from the boson semi condition. The further fractionalization of the semi. So I already used a lot of time. So almost finished here. So finally just let me summarize. So in this kind of framework, I think there could be many interesting things in future. So I think this topological order, the concept of the topological order might be related to many things, even in other fields. So the idea of this atomic order in Fermat system kind of like make a square root of the atomic order in boson system, and we know that supersymmetry is the kind of square root of usual symmetry, supergravity is the square root of the gravity, Dirac equation is square root of the Klein-Gordon equation.
Mm-hmm.
And interesting, some people maybe do loop gravity here, so it might be interesting what happens if we try to make a certain square root of the loop gravity. And recently we make progress also on this mathematical side, like this cohomology theory, the cohomology class. Actually, we can make this square root. We get this super cohomology class. There we find something very interesting. This might be some mathematician here interested in this so-called stimulus square evolves in that kind of structure in the super cohomology class.
Stimulus
square. So it's a cohomology operation from H of D to H of D plus 2 with coefficient Z2. So it's kind of a map from H, D, G, Q2. Yeah, so this stimulus function, it's, I don't know how to visualize this, so it's kind of related to this discretized space-time structure, because it only evolves as a kind of this coefficient Z2, so there's no continuum limit for this kind of field theory. So all these cohomology class, because cohomology class is closely related to this Dirac-Witten's classification for gauge theory, super version is kind of try to generalize Dirac-Witten's result for super version and even possibly for supergroup. So I think that's interesting part. One thing I also want to mention is that all these kind of topological phases, including boson, fermion, if we look at the interface, recently we will work on some particular example, and it turns out to be all of them to be conformal field theory. So here I think it's a different way to understand this holographic principle. I think from string theory or ADCFT, there's some different construction, but from this TKFT, it looks like a very general that on the boundaries, conformal field theory. But we still need to understand how to use the bulk category theory to explicitly compute the correlation functions for the conformal field theory.
So
on the boundary.
You mean the conformal field theory between a fermionic bulk and the.
No. I mean, for any of these two classes, if we can make a boundary for these different topological phases. But maybe there are some consistent conditions that you need to make them compatible on the boundary, otherwise it might be not well defined. But in a particular case, you can choose some gauge theory that belong to different cohomology class, and you put them together, make a boundary. The boundary could be some safety. And this kind of construction is interesting that although we only worked out some 1+1D example, but I guess this scheme might be working in arbitrary dimension.
Does the minus one, if you choose alpha to be minus one in your case and you're a fermionic toric code, do you get different T matrices?
Choose what?
You can choose minus one and zero, minus I and zero I.
Maybe I should have mentioned this. Actually, there's effective field theory description for this plus minus I solution. So if people here are familiar with transcendence theory, actually it's just a transcendence theory described by K-matrix. And this K-matrix description might be, we know that for torical it's very simple, it's just a 0 to 0. And for this is torical. And for the double semion, it's just 0, 2, 2, 2, which is equivalent to 2 minus 2 up to this SL2Z transformation. And for this fermionic solution, actually it's just the other two solution. We also call it spin transcendence theory. But yeah, in terms of field theory, this particular example, we know the solution, I think, before, but we just don't know how to consider this explicitly, lattice model or digraph Witten type of model to realize it. But this framework actually is very general, and we can even find the solutions much more beyond this. OK, thanks.